Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for November 11th, 2011.
The Science Update Podcast is produced by AAAS, advancing science, serving society.
Populations under stress, and this can be all sorts of different animals, are more vulnerable to things that might otherwise not actually cause them to die.
The python burns through these fatty acids very, very rapidly to create the energy that the snake needs to be able to digest its meal.
It's very advantageous for the males to know whether or not a female has mated that way. They don't waste time going after a female. That's just going to kick them in the face.
Happy 11-11-11! This week, why one insect pest's mating habits could lead to its downfall, and how swimming animals affect the global climate. Also, pythons reveal the benefits of having a big heart. But first, Suzanne Bard reports that predators are literally scaring dragonflies to death.
Can stress contribute to an early death? It can if you're a dragonfly larva. Freshwater ecologist Shannon McCauley, now of Cal Poly State, and her colleagues at the University of Toronto exposed dragonfly larvae to the sights, sounds, and smells of their predators, but didn't actually let them get eaten.
We had actually two experiments as part of this study. The first was done in aquaria, where we caged the dragonflies. They were inside these little mesh tents, and they could see and they could smell predators that were out in the aquaria. The second experiment was much larger. It was mimicking the conditions you might find in a pond. So we have these large cattle tanks, and they hold about 100 gallons of water. And in there, we actually caged the fish, and the dragonflies were outside of the cages. So again, they could see them and they could smell them, but the fish can't actually eat them. So we let the prey, the dragonflies, experience all the cues of predation, right? You can see them, you can smell them, but we didn't actually allow them to be fed on. And then we followed through time, what are the changes in their behavior, and also what are the changes in their survival rate? How many of them die in these different conditions?
McCauley says they were much more likely to die an early death than larvae that led a predator-free existence.
In the aquarium experiment, when they're exposed to other dragonflies, actually, so larger dragonflies that are predators, it went up 2.5 times. And when they're exposed to fish, the frequency of dying was 4.3 times greater than when they were just housed in these cages, but no predators were present. In the second experiment, where it looks more like a pond, it was about a 10% increase. So 10% more larvae died when they could see and smell the fish, but the fish weren't feeding on them.
While dying from stress might not sound adaptive, McCauley says increased vigilance against predators in the short term might mean that animals have less reserves to fight parasites, infection, and disease in the long term.
I can get eaten right now, or I can divert some energy away to decrease my chances of getting eaten. That part is adaptive. But there's always trade-offs. There's cost to that. So under some circumstances, it might be the right decision if you're about to get eaten to spend that energy. But it can increase your vulnerability to other factors that normally you could fight off. Oftentimes we can fight off infections that if we're malnourished or if we're very stressed, we might not be able to fight off.
She adds that many organisms may be at risk of indirect death from stressful conditions.
Populations under stress, and this can be all sorts of different animals, are more vulnerable to things that might otherwise not actually cause them to die. So if you think about animals in polluted environments, animals in fragmented environments, things that might normally not kill them, they might become vulnerable to.
She plans to continue studying the factors like infection, parasites, and malnutrition that directly cause this stress-related mortality in dragonflies and other animals.
Thanks, Suzanne. Western tarnished plant bugs are a common pest of cotton, but USDA scientists think the bugs' mating habits may be a key to controlling them. According to research entomologists John Byers and Colin Brent, male plant bugs prefer to mate only with females that haven't mated recently. Now they've discovered that the males mark the females with a compound called myristyl acetate during mating. Brent explains.
We basically put this compound on females and determined whether or not a male would still be attracted to them, and lo and behold, these virgin females were suddenly as unattractive as a mated female. It's very advantageous for the males to know whether or not a female has mated that way. They don't waste time going after a female. That's just going to kick them in the face in response to their courtship attempts.
The researchers say pesticides are traditionally used to control the bugs, but they kill their natural predators as well.
And we want to keep those within the system. So what we would like is alternatives that won't affect those predator insects, but will help knock down the populations of bugs.
Brent's colleague, John Byers, thinks the Love Repellent has potential as a birth control agent to help decrease the bug population without the use of pesticides.
We're going to be doing more experiments trying to see if we can kind of stop males from mating with females in nature or on plants when we put more of this compound in low dosages all over the plant.
Until about 12,000 years ago, lions, mammoths, and even giant 8-foot-long beavers roamed North America. Then they went extinct. Humans were just becoming established in North America, and many scientists blame them for the extinctions. But the warming climate also could have doomed the big mammals. A study in the journal Nature finds that both were to blame. Researchers found that some mammals went extinct despite having no contact with man, while others had smaller populations caused by the warm climate but were pushed to extinction by human hunters.
And in other animal news, scientists report in the Journal of Visualized Experiments that swimming sea creatures have a big effect on global climate. Billions of waggling fish, jetting squid, and flapping jellyfish mix warm and cool water to such an extent that it changes climate patterns.
Thanks, Suzanne. Next, an enlarged heart can be a sign of cardiovascular disease. But star athletes also have larger-than-average hearts, and that's a sign of physical fitness. Correspondent Justin Warner tells us how pythons are helping researchers understand the good kind of big-heartedness.
Python blood may hold the key to new heart medicines. This according to molecular biologist Leslie Leinwand of the University of Colorado Boulder. She explains that while a python digests a huge meal, its organs temporarily grow up to double in size. Her team was interested in the heart.
It's been well known for years that your heart can get bigger in response to exercise, and that's a beneficial process, whereas your heart can also get bigger in response to disease. The enlargement of the python heart appears to be that athlete's type of enlargement.
She and postdoc Cecilia Raquelme and their colleagues found that a combination of three fatty acids in the bloodstream builds up the python's heart tissue. And yet that big surge of fat doesn't harm the snake or leave behind fatty deposits in the blood vessels.
The python burns through these fatty acids very, very rapidly to create the energy that the snake needs to be able to digest its meal.
Their team also treated rat heart cells and live mice with the python fatty acids. In both cases, the heart tissue got bigger and stronger as long as all three fatty acids were delivered. It's hoped that eventually the python blood could inspire new treatments for vulnerable human hearts as well.
Thanks, Justin. When we eat a lot, our digestive systems actually get bigger. Now, researchers at the University of California at Berkeley may have found out why. Biologist David Bilder and his colleagues studied fruit flies. When fed, the fly's gut cells make their own insulin, which activates nearby stem cells.
So the local insulin is immediately upregulated upon feeding, and it both increases the division rates of the stem cells and also makes it more likely that they will produce new stem cells.
Having extra stem cells, in turn, makes it possible to grow the gut rather than just maintain it. In the Berkeley experiment, led by Bilder and postdoc Lucy O'Brien, the fly's guts grew up to 4 times bigger in as many days. The findings could lead to better treatments for obesity and for rebuilding intestinal tissue lost to disease or injury. Well, that's our show for this week. Next week, new research suggests that Neanderthals' shorter legs were actually an advantage for navigating mountainous terrain. Also, what happens when bacteria fight other bacteria? The result could become a living antibiotic. Until then, tune into the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website, scienceupdate.com, or at iTunes. You can also check out Science Update's fan page on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. And if you have a science question, give us a call at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT. If we use your question, we'll send you a Science Update mug. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.